This is not a government. It is a racket. Under the cover of the pandemic, ministers have used VIP fast tracks and their private email accounts to funnel taxpayers' cash to their mates in secret. Absolutely disgusting. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, that was my attempt to channel Angela Rayner, who is currently the deputy leader of the Labour Party, who is one of the most powerful figures, I suppose, in Britain. And that was one of her tweets. And that was a tweet that was, of course, shared many times. It was shared 1.5... It was like 1,500 times. It was shared 480 times. And she has many other tweets that are extremely popular in which she uses all kinds of in-group, out-group language in which she is highly polarised in her language. And that's what I want to talk about today. It is the influence, a very interesting paper that has just been published, on the influence of social media on making our society far more polarised. Now, we know there is evidence that society is in itself and has for a long time been becoming more polarised. And I've looked in other videos at why that is the case. So first of all, Peter Turkin has looked at this. First of all, you have elite overproduction. So you have far too many people getting degrees, for example. Those people therefore believe they are part of the elite, but there's only a limited number of elite places. Therefore, you get all kinds of people who are entitled and feel they should be part of the elite, but they're not really. This leads to intra-elite competition, lots of fighting between the elite, and a very polarised situation where people try to get into the elite by destroying each other. So it leads to lots of sort of hatred and nastiness. Secondly, you have an excess of labour. This leads to a big differences between rich and poor, and rich and poor increasingly hating each other and much less of a sense of social solidarity. There are other issues we can look at as well, such as cognitive stratification, that is to say meritocracy, which means that people that are more intelligent will increasingly have a very different culture from people that are less intelligent, will live in different places and will have not very much to do with them, creating polarisation as well. And this also creates a social stagnation, whereby there's very little social movement. So we can look at all kinds of reasons why society is increasingly polarised. Another reason could be declining IQ, which makes people more black and white in their thinking. Yet another reason it could be that you have lots of people that are very, very religious and very conservative that are breeding, but people that are very, very liberal that have taken over society, and therefore you're going to get increasing polarisation as the percentage of the society that is more conservative and religious for genetic reasons increases as against an elite that is highly liberal. Whatever. But the point is that there can also be environmental things that take that and make it considerably worse. And this paper by Steve Rather et al, Outgroup Animosity Drives Engagement on Social Media in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States, makes this point. He shows that 4 billion people in the world use social media. And it is people's main source of information with regard to news for a lot of people and with regard to what politicians are saying. As he notes, we know that society is becoming more polarised, but is this making it worse? Well, what they did was they analysed posts for news and whatever by news groups and by US congressmen, and they analysed over almost 3 million Twitter posts and posts from other social media. And what they found is that posts that are about out-groups, so a post where you're basically slagging off an out-group and saying that a member of a group that is not your group is bad and is morally deficient and is a bad person or a bad group is retweeted twice as often as other kinds of tweets. And each derogatory word that is used about a perceived out-group increases the odds of your tweet being retweeted by 67%. Out-group condemnation is one of the strongest predictors of ensuring that your tweet travels and that your tweet is read. 4.8 times more effective condemning an out-group than simply expressing negative emotions and saying, you know, that something is bad, which is in turn 6.7 times more effective than simply expressing sort of moral emotions or even, you know, virtue signalling or whatever. So the best thing you can do if you want to ensure on social media media that you are noticed. And of course, if you are noticed on social media, you are more likely to become famous, you are more likely to become influential, you are, as a politician, more likely to ensure that your tweet is quoted in the newspapers, which was something that you once started noticing about 10 years ago, that tweets started being quoted in the newspapers, is to put out a tweet that is simplistic, that is clear, that sums up the situation, and which morally condemns your opponent, and which divides the world basically into good and evil, black and white, you as the good group, the other group as the bad group, and which morally condemns that group, and indeed puts it talks about them in highly derogatory terms. So this is what social media helps to create. We have a society that is already highly polarized, but this creates what the writers call perverse incentives to make the situation worse. The most popular tweets anyway are tweets in which anger is expressed, and in which there are in-group reactions against a perceived nasty out-group. So this is it's as if people go onto Twitter in order in some way to become part of an in-group and to condemn an out-group. And the nature of Twitter and similar social media makes it worse by incentivizing people to condemn the out-group and to therefore heighten a sense of polarization. If you are a member of the condemned out-group, then this will make you perceive your group and that you are under attack, which will make you dislike the group that is condemning you even more. Therefore, you will put out tweets in which you condemn that out-group. They will perceive themselves as under attack and they will dislike you even more and want to morally condemn you even more because you will perceive yourselves as two groups that have decreasingly anything in common and are just fighting each other and whatever. And so you end up with this spiral of increasing polarization that is caused by Twitter and other social media. Now, this is then increasingly reported in the newspapers because, of course, it creates, that's another thing about the internet. The paper doesn't look at this, but the internet, you've got all of these different media sources in a way that you didn't used to have. And so the media are desperately competing with each other and desperately competing with the many other news sources that exist. And how can they do this? Well, they have to get clicks. They have to create clickbait. What creates clickbait? It's fighting. It's people condemning other people. It's people expressing strong emotions. We are a group-oriented species. We want to create groups that we're in. We want to battle against out-groups. And so we are fascinated by conflict. Conflict is central to our, it's very important to understand who's in charge of your group and who's winning and who's losing and whatever, so that you can survive and pass on your genes, at least in prehistory. And so therefore we click on that, and therefore it just creates this symbiotic relationship whereby underlying polarization is rendered worse and worse and worse and worse by social media. And personally, Twitter, I personally would I remember when they started reporting, it must have been 10 years ago, whenever it was, when you started to increasingly get what politicians tweeted being reported in the newspapers. And I remember thinking, and it was always these short, simplistic summaries that would tend to condemn other people. And of course, it's then from this that you get the development of the Twitter mob. And then it's from this that you get the idea that there is this strong group that is bonded together, and that people can be brought down and lose their jobs simply on the grounds of a Twitter mob that is morally condemning them. And this then helps create further polarization, because then you have this idea of from a right wing perspective, of the evil leftist mob that wants to drive you out of your job. The existence of this and the power of this is promoted by the media. And to a much lesser extent, because, of course, we've seen in other videos that conservatives are more tolerant because they're lower in the personality trait neuroticism, and so they're less Machiavellian. And they tend to cede ground to the left because they share all five moral foundations, whereas the left only seem to have the two moral foundations of equality and harm avoidance, as we've looked at before. But this, you could also get a right-wing mob as well. And so it just creates further polarisation. Now, this is not the first time that the medium has altered the nature of our discourse. This was pointed out in the 1980s with a very interesting book called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. And this was written in 1984. And he looked at what television had done, and to a lesser extent radio, but particularly television had done to the discourse in the world. Now, until that point, you mostly read about things in the newspapers. You read about politicians in the newspapers. You read their speeches in the newspapers. And the newspapers allowed for a much more complicated, detailed analysis of everything. Television changed things because you had the nightly news. So therefore, you had this very, very brief summary of the situation, which had to be made as simplistic and as sort of black and white as possible. And so therefore, this created a situation, you could argue, where even if intelligence was going down, and you know I've looked in the past at various videos that intelligence is in decline, we are becoming less intelligent, and this means that you become more black and white in your thinking, you become more simplistic, you become sort of lazier and less of a future orientation, so you're less inclined to read things in detail, you want it's just easy, you want to just be passive and whatever, this could create, could make that worse. So first of all, with television, you get the rise of the soundbite. Politicians realise they have to be able to summarise their views in a simplistic way that will carry, in a way that they didn't used to do. So you get the rise of the soundbite. This was epitomised in New Labour before the internet took off at the height of televisual power. You know, education, 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 or whatever it happens to be. You get the rise of the soundbite. Secondly, you get this packaged news where the most simplistic representation of whatever is happening is made possible. Thirdly, you get relatively little detail. There isn't time for detail of the kind that you would get in a newspaper where you can sit there for hours on a Sunday reading in depth about whatever's going on in the world. So therefore, you get this simplification of what's going on, which, of course, could involve polarisation, could involve black and white, good and bad, good and evil, that kind of thing. You get much, much more of a stress on what people look like. So before, in the newspapers, you might get a few photographs. If you go back before a certain point in the newspapers, people didn't even know what their politicians looked like. And so you could get remarkably ugly politicians like Abraham Lincoln or whatever. People didn't know or care what their politicians looked like. But no, you get this change. And therefore, a big part of people is not even what they say. In television, it becomes how they sound and what they look like. And so this creates this further change. Now, again, you could argue that if it is people that are more our strategist, people that are more inclined to live fast and die young, those kinds of people, therefore, they will be more inclined to judge people by what they look like, because those kinds of people are evolved to live fast, die young, pass on their genes as quickly as possible, and thus be interested in people that have good genetic quality and they're, you know, are good looking, because it's those kinds of people that are more likely to survive in an unstable environment, as opposed to people that are intelligent or cerebral or whatever. Now, so you that could be, that process of being more superficial, more interested in sex and sexuality could be happening anyway, but television is going to make it worse by the fact that it's what becomes much more important in television is what you look like, how you sound, these kinds of superficial qualities. Another aspect is being passive. People who are less intelligent are likely to just be passive. They're likely to just sort of accept, they're not really think about things, not really be bothered to investigate things in any considerable depth. Well, television helps you with that because it's a passive act. You just sit there and listen. Whereas with reading, you actually have to sort of become involved. And I make an effort. And I think it's interesting at the moment that as intelligence is declining, increasingly, I saw some tweet the other day about David Mitchell, the comedian, and someone said, oh, people should, yeah, his autobiography, it's available on Amazon. It's worth a listen. Worth a listen. Because people aren't reading books anymore. That's too much effort. People aren't reading books. They want to listen to books. They want to be passive like children and have a bedtime story, rather than actually make the effort to read a book. And I get this myself with my own books, people constantly contacting me and saying, is there going to be an audio version of the book? To which I think, and perhaps it's because I'm of an older generation, for goodness sake, why can't you just read the book?
But no, people don't want to do that. They don't want to read anymore. They want to be passive and they want to just sort of absorb the book while they're running on their treadmill or doing whatever they're doing. Another thing that Postman argues it reduces is rational argument. You can't have detailed rational argument in the form of television because you've got to be quick. So you get the American presidential election debate. You know, in theory, it's meant to be a rational argument, but in reality, it comes down to what you look like, what you sound like, and your ability to quickly summarise something and create sound bites and whatever. And so he argues that television, even if it is reflecting the decline of the age of reason, helps to perpetuate the decline of the age of reason. And I think you have exactly this with Twitter. We are in a situation where we are more and more and more polarised, where we are less and less and less reasonable due to declining IQ and whatever. And Twitter helps to make this worse. And so, the internet, you could argue, helps to make this worse due to clickbaits and having to stand out from the crowd. But then Twitter and other such media in particular help to make this worse and help to create a situation where there is much, much, much more polarisation than there would otherwise be. Yes. So I hope this is a bit of interest, and if it has, please do subscribe. It helps most violently if you do that. Remember that I live stream Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. If you look in the box below, you can see ways you can help assist the channel, and I will see you soon, and goodbye!